Hey everybody, if it's Tuesday at 1 o'clock, it must be Tuesdays with Dave.
I want to welcome everybody to the call today on this last Tuesday before Christmas and the last Tuesdays with me before the New Year's. So in reflecting back to the year, it's been a pretty good year in terms of we've got a couple more deals under our belt. We're in a couple of new different markets. We've been in all the different asset classes. We've had many students getting new deals and more deals. Like our high five today goes to Steve Firestone, and I'll explain why in a minute. But it's been a good year all around for everybody. Coaches are reporting that the deals are up. We're up throughout the year. More people doing them, more people doing bigger deals. It doesn't matter what size deal you do, really. It just depends on our success is based on your success in doing deals. You do make more money on the big ones, and they are a little bit easier doing it. But everybody has their own comfort zone. Everybody, you know, falls where they may. So in terms of the year, it's been a pretty good year all around. I hope it's been a good year for you as well. Now's the time to sit down and think about what you want to plan for next year. You want to do your first deal, you want to do your 10th deal, you want to get to 100 units, 1,000 units, 10,000 units. Sit down and really think that out. The more you plan, the more successful you'll be. Because typically, you know, when you write things down, you plan it out, your mind takes a new direction, a new course of action. And a lot of times it acts like a stealth fighter plane. It just goes out there and does it without you. You know, while you're doing something else, your mind is figuring out how to do this thing that you've written down, this master plan that you've got. So the most important thing you can do, and it's not just at the beginning of each year, it's the beginning of each quarter, and then the beginning of each month, and then the beginning of each week, and the beginning of each day. If you read Rockefeller Habits, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So Christmas is just around the corner. I don't know what you're getting in your stocking, but I usually get Lavardi's chocolates, dark chocolate salted caramels. They're the best in the world, this little chocolate store in Weymouth, Massachusetts. So I'm hoping that they're in my stocking again this year. It's funny, you know, we're doing a live broadcast today. We're gonna end this call at 1:45. We're doing a live broadcast at 2 o'clock, and we talk about, we're going to introduce everybody to the entire staff here, and everybody's going to talk about the smartest thing that they've learned in real estate since they've been here. So not only you'll get to meet the staff, but you'll get to meet a lot of people. You'll get to learn a lot about what the perspective that people have on this investing game. And number three, I'm going to ask each person, you know, their favorite Christmas memory. And, you know, it's hard to come up with just one favorite. I've been coming up with a lot of them. And yesterday I was talking about the fact that when we were kids, we would all meet in either my room or my brother's Jess room. I would wake up my brothers and sisters because I was always the first one to wake up Christmas morning. I would wake them all up. We would gather in the room, and I'm talking we're ages. We were all about two years apart. So I was probably 6 years old, maybe 7 years old. So Jeff would be 9, Tammy would be 5, my brother Dan would be 3. And we lived in this old New England farmhouse. It wasn't on a farm. It actually got moved. And through the years, other houses came up around it. But this old New England farmhouse, and there was a fireplace in every room. The house was built in the late 1700s. So there was a fireplace in every room, and there was a fireplace in my parents' bedroom, and that's where we would hang our stockings. So I would slither in there, and the stuff in the stockings was never wrapped. Santa never took the time to wrap the stocking stuff. So I slid them in there with a flashlight, and I would look into each one of the stockings, and I would report back to the kids what they got in their stocking, what I saw. I didn't try to go too deep because, you know, my parents were sleeping right there. I didn't want to wake them up. And then after I made that report, I would go downstairs. I would slither downstairs, and I would take a look at all the different boxes that were wrapped. And I would go back upstairs, and I would intimately describe the size of the boxes that each person had their names on. And then we'd have to wait until 6 in the morning. The rule in our house is that you couldn't go downstairs until 6 in the morning. You could get your stockings at 6 in the morning, but you couldn't start unwrapping the gifts until my father got his coffee. And that was the deal. So that's one of my cherished memories, but that's not the one I'm going to talk about today when we go live at 2. have another one in mind, actually, that I'll share. So during today's call, if you have a question, certainly press star zero. This is how it works. If you're new to coaching, welcome to the coaching call, to the mastery program. Just simply listen to go into that unlimited resource of training that we have there in that training center. Listen to your coach. Listen in and ask questions in these calls and just do it. If you take action and you do what we tell you to do, you just can't help but be successful. You just can't. It's a proven system. So welcome aboard. So in order to ask any question you may, and this is a shortened version of the call since we only have about 45 minutes, you press star zero. Star zero will get you into the queue, and the operator will introduce you to the call. You can ask any question you like. And if you'd like to mention one of your favorite Christmas memories, feel free to do that as well, since we're just a few days away from the visit from the Fat Man. Yeah. All right, I want to give a high five to Steve Firestone from Boca Raton, Florida. He just purchased another 200 units 2 weeks ago. The price was $8 million. Got it through a broker relationship. Said it took a while to create these broker relationships, but because of the broker relationships, he's got deals coming in left and right. On this particular deal, the value plays that were that the rent was below market and that 30 units need to be rehabbed, and the management was crappy. So he's got three kind of value adds on that one. He's got another 209 units. That's for $8.5 million. That's under contract. He's going to close on that, and he will have closed on 1,000 units since he entered Mastery in December 2015. And he says because he's been able to close all of these units, he's able to sponsor other people. And he's sponsoring a 79-unit deal for $3 million. So congratulations to Steve Firestone. Yeah. I wonder if he's part of that Firestone family. He probably gets that question a lot. I was watching a documentary on PBS about different towns in Ohio. And I think it was Akron, Ohio, where Firestone Tire was and Goodyear Tire and all of that folklore comes from. That was an interesting story. All right, so I've got some questions here, but since we have a short time and people took the time to come on the call, I'm going to open it up to call questions first, and then if there's a little bit of gap that needs to be filled, I'll answer the questions that were faxed over. So, operator, who would be our first caller?
Okay, first question comes from Michael. Michael, please go ahead.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good. How's it going?
Good. I have a question regarding replacing management companies, particularly
yeah.
if you're going to buy a property and there's a long-term contract in place. And if you find things that are not, I mean, they're not reporting income or whatever reason, you have costs to terminate a contract. What is your process or procedure of getting that done?
All right. First of all, the contract doesn't go with the new ownership.
So it does not transfer.
No, it doesn't transfer. The leases do, but that contract doesn't.
Does not, okay.
Yeah, but let's talk about, this question just came up, too. And, I forget exactly where, but I just recently answered this question. And that is, all right, so the answer to your question is you will get a sucky management company, somebody that's not performing properly in your property. There's a couple of things you need to do to help yourself out prior to that, and that's in the management contract. You must be a signer on the operating account, and that's got to be in the management contract. The other thing is you need to have a 30-day out clause, either you or the management company, even though it's a one-year contract, you need to have the ability to release that contract with a 30-day written notice. So you're going to get a contract, you're going to get a management company that doesn't work. For whatever reason, you're going to have to replace them. Because you are a co-signer on that operating account, you will be able to sweep that account the night before that you fire them. In the process of firing them, you will have your replacement management company in place and ready to go that the morning you're going to fire them. The morning of the firing, you will have a locksmith ready to go, and they will go to the property, meet the new management company there. They will change the locks prior to the office actually opening. And then when the employees come in, and then the other management company will be notified by an attorney, email, fax machine, and a phone call that they are no longer managing the property and they're no longer allowed on the site. The employees will come in on the larger properties, and the new management company will inform them that the management company was fired, that they were employees of the prior management company. Most of these cases, if the management company gets fired, they usually don't take employees with them because they don't have another job for them, unless they're really good, and then they'll try to move them somewhere else. And you've got to keep the really good people there. So if you've got a relationship with either a really good manager or a really good maintenance guy, it's usually a manager or the lead tech that you don't want to lose, you will personally have a call with them first thing in the morning and just let them know that management company is no longer there, the new management company is. And if they're willing, then you'd like them to now become an employee of the new management company. And the management company will talk to everybody and just let them know that that management company is no longer working here. You don't know what their job status is, but they're willing to hire you on the spot, you know, to be working for that company. And then they sit down, they talk all about their company, they have them fill out all kinds of paperwork. And that's the way it goes. We've done this so many different times, you know, owning so many properties for 18 years. You know, I must have done this about 12, 14 times at least. But that's how you do it. That's the process.
And have you ever had any pushback from the management companies by getting blindsided from the firing? Did you have to have them physically?
No, because they did it for underperforming. I mean, they lost they lost their position for underperforming. So that's, they know what's going on.
Okay. All right, yeah, that helps a lot. I was talking to I went to a local REIT meeting out here, and I'm in Los Angeles, and I was talking with a potential private investor who doesn't like to invest in markets not local, and I was trying to give him a reason. He asked me, well, what if you have a bad management company, you have to fire them, and they're in, say, Florida, and you're here in Los Angeles, what do you do? So I had to sort of give him basically what you said, but that into that detail, so that helps a lot when I can go back to him and tell him this is the process, and basically through attorneys, we have to go that route and basically legally get them removed.
Yeah, and, sometimes you handle a question like that. That's kind of like an offensive question that will put you on defense type of thing, but you handle that type of question going back on offense, and you say something like, you know, it's not a matter of when, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And when that does happen, you know, these are the reasons it would happen: underperformance, you know, not collecting the rents, not leasing the property up, you know, whatever it is. But they've underperformed, they have the opportunity to perform, but they've shown that they can't, so therefore they need to be replaced, and this is the process of being replaced. So, it's not a question of when, it's a question of when. And if you're in enough deals, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, Dave, thanks a lot. Helps a lot.
Hey, you're welcome. Go get them.
All righty.
All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. This is Mark Nelson in Somerville, Massachusetts. How are you doing today?
Hey, Mark. What's going up there in Somerville? The big revival is going up there in Davis Square, huh, and everywhere around there?
No, there's always something going on in the square here. It's a lot of fun. It's a great place to live. Yeah. Hey, I got a few questions on three properties. First one is that when do we send templates to Jeff and Jeannie once we think we have the numbers where they work in the template? Is that before or after an LOI?
You can do it either before or after. You're probably wise to do it before until you're very comfortable, you know, put that you've got your analysis done right. But the thing is it's not just sending over the template. It's if you think you've got a deal, what you want to do is you got to go through the how to submit a deal package. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because when you're underwriting a deal, it's not just the numbers. It's the numbers. It's the competition. There's a lot of different factors that are involved, and that's what the how to submit a deal package is all about. If you don't have a copy of it, just simply email over to one of them, and they'll send you a copy of that, the step-by-step on what you need to submit for them to analyze it. Otherwise, there's no reason for them to analyze the deal, intermain as well. There's no reason for one of those three to analyze a deal if you haven't submitted the deal properly, because you know what they're doing? They're finding your mistake, you know, and you'll find your mistake if you just follow that simple, you know, how to submit a deal process. We learned this the hard way when we first started out, because we want to partner with our students, and we do. But we were there were so many deals flung over here, you know, flung over here to see if they would stick, that just took
right.
so much of our time. So now we're insistent upon the package being completed. They'll send it back. If it's not completed, there's something missing, they'll send it back and just say, you know, this part is missing. Please resubmit the package when you've gotten this piece. You would not be able to submit a deal to a bank without having all this stuff done, and you certainly shouldn't submit an LOI without having done all this stuff. You know what I mean?
That's great feedback. Great. That's what I wanted to hear. There's a lot of questions following that, so that's the launches right there. Let me speak specifically about three different properties. One question for you.
Yeah, you know what? You're kind of breaking up with your phone. It's like bubbly. Can you get to a better zone?
Oh, wow. I know it is breaking up. Oh, is this any better?
No.
Okay. The question, we're looking at three different properties. One's a 48-unit.
You know what? Listen, hold on a second. Operator, can you hear me? Operator? The operator probably can't hear me. What I want you to do...
You. It's actually coming from Mark's line.
I know it. Can you talk to him and ask him to call back and then put him back into the queue?
Okay,
so
definitely. I'll do that.
All right. So take me on.
Up next we have. Okay.
Right.
Up next we have Ginia. Ginia, please go ahead.
Hey, Ginia.
Hi, Dave. This is Ginia from New York. How are you?
Hi, good. Hey, did you hear that conversation I was having with the operator?
No, I didn't.
All right. So for everybody else that's listening, and for Mark as well, I just talked to the operator. Whenever we talk, she puts us in what's called the green room, so nobody else can hear. But I asked her to talk to Mark and ask him to call back because we couldn't hear him, and hopefully we'll get a better line, and then he's going to jump into the front of the queue. So how are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much. It's been snowing here. It's beautiful.
Oh, that must be great. Where are you?
New York. Long Island.
Port. Oh, Long Island?
Long Island. North Shore, Long Island, next to Oyster Bay.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I was actually flying in. I'm flying in. I was flying in from Cincinnati over the weekend.
Right now? That's
it was over the weekend. It was, you know, I was flying in from Cincinnati, and my flight was delayed several times because LaGuardia was closed.
Ah.
Yeah, but
okay.
I mean, now it's melted. I guess it was a big snowstorm over the weekend.
Oh, okay. So what's going on in your world?
So I just went to see this property in Louisville last week, and I like
yeah.
it a lot, and I submitted
yeah.
an offer, and we're actually in the best and final. The thing is, Dave, so it is in an A area of Louisville, an east end of Louisville, a very nice, good area, surrounded by much nicer properties. This one is a major kind of rehab repositioning deal. So the area is great. The thing is, the neighbor of this property is a very questionable establishment. It's a motel. And it's a right next door. The fence between them is very flimsy, so I'm sure I could invest in a good, tight, big fence. But is that enough? Would you pursue a property in these circumstances?
Would I pursue what? Oh, would I pursue a property under these circumstances?
Yeah.
Well, it's a seedy motel. Were they renting by the hour?
Yes.
You're probably in a really if there's a hotel like that, you're in a bad neighborhood. What other retail is there? Are there bars on the windows of the retail?
No. Everything else is very legit. There's IHOP. There's a Waffle House. There's a gorgeous Marriott Hotel. Days Inn. Nice hotels.
Oh.
The Beaumont. It's a good neighborhood. It's just this one hotel has been run down by the owner. It's an owner had it for 5 years, and they kind of haven't done anything. They said they were going to clean it up and renovate, but they haven't.
Well, and it's right next door?
Yeah.
Property.
It's right next door. I mean, there's a fence between them, but the fence is pretty bad. I could, put up a nice, tight, big fence.
Is there a hole? How many units is this property?
228.
Is there a hole in the fence? Are people going in there to do drugs and stuff?
I don't think there is. No. It's a very safe location. I mean, there's two security officers living on the property. There is no drugs going on the property. No spillover from that establishment.
Oh.
So it's the property itself is in an okay shape. It definitely needs a rehab, but it's the tenant profile. It's not like D tenants or anything. It could be upgraded, but it's still it's a decent property in a good neighborhood. It's just this particular motel next door.
Sounds like it's an opportunity to get a lower price in negotiations, and then if that hotel changes over and becomes good again, then you've got a good deal. You know,
okay.
You can think about possibly buying the hotel as well.
I was actually thinking about that to see if we could buy the hotel, and then,
yeah.
then we would expand our property. We'll have extra land for more units maybe. Mm. Okay. Okay, so you wouldn't say that's a deal breaker.
Nope.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. I hope we get it. It seems like a great opportunity with good upside.
Yeah. Let us know how you make out.
What's that?
Let us know how you make out.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Good luck. All right. Who's next?
Okay, up next we have Adam. Adam, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Adam, what's going on?
Not too much. I am here in Philadelphia, and I actually was just at immersion training this weekend.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Learned a ton.
Sweet.
Learned a ton. So I had this particular deal come across my desk, and I have a question as to how a lender might view it. And so this might be kind of a broad question, because the real answer might be call up your lenders and ask them. But it's a package. It's a portfolio. So it's essentially five properties that consist of 24 units. And I'm just curious that if I would be purchasing as a portfolio, if I would be able to do one loan or if I would need multiple loans, one for each property.
Well, if you do, there's pros and cons of both. If you do multiple loans, you have a lot more closing costs associated with a deal. If you
right.
put them all into one, you're going to have a I forget the name of that clause, but you're able to the ability to sell off the properties. There would need to be some sort of a clause in there that allows you to do that. But normally, when you have that clause, you can't participate in the profits until the very last property is sold. Everything goes to paying down the existing mortgage on the property. Or maybe you set a term where, as long as you have X amount of equity, you can pull out X amount of equity yourself. That's the best type of clause they have in there.
Okay.
So what's the total number of units?
It's 24.
So 24 and five properties, average five properties each, five units each?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So four of the properties are five units each. And then one of the properties is a quadplex.
All right. Those properties that are five units, we call them tweeners because it's the first designation into the commercial designation. Anything over four units is considered multifamily commercial instead of multifamily residential. And everything goes up. Your insurance goes up. You now have to dispose of the trash yourself. So that's an added fee. The city doesn't do it. Just miscellaneous expenses across the board. Sometimes you take a look at those five-unit properties and you analyze it as if you were going to turn it back into a four-unit. Maybe you give – you see how the property is cut up and then see where you can add – if you could add one bedroom to three units, that would be great. And now you have, additional bedroom units for three out of the four that you're creating. So that's the first
okay.
thing to take a look at. And they're really hard to resell, too, because of that fact, these five-unit properties.
Right.
And that's probably why they're bundling them together. If you're getting a good deal and you've got a lot of equity in these properties, then I would certainly move forward and try to secure them all and then, just deal with the fact that they're five units and decide whether you're going to keep them like that or move them down to four. Are they all spread out throughout a particular city or town, or are they close?
They are. They're not side by side, but they're in the same neighborhood within Philadelphia. It's actually in. I mean, where the properties sit today is like a DC, but it's right in the path of progress. So the area is really changing.
How's the whole deal cash flow?
Sorry?
How's the whole deal cash flow? Good cash flow?
It cash flows well. I haven't had a chance to sit down and really, really crunch the numbers. I was going to go look at the property this morning. It actually already went under contract, but I figured that it was a strong chance that I would encounter the same or a similar scenario because Philadelphia has so many row homes, similar, I'm sure, to Boston, you know, within Philadelphia proper. So I figured it would be worth, you know, getting an answer to the question, even though this particular deal is currently taken.
Well, that's my take.
But it was an 11.5 cap. And the numbers on the surface looked pretty good, which I guess is probably why it went under contract so quickly.
Yep. Those are hard deals, by the way. It's almost like buying a bunch of one-off smaller deals. I've had one 5-unit property, but it was a combination of a 3-unit and a 2-unit sitting on the same lot. And I've had other situations where I've had one situation where I took a 5. I currently have one 5, but I had a situation where I took that 5 and I brought it down to a 4.
Okay.
And then there are several deals I passed on because it was a 5 and there was nothing else you could do with it.
Right.
And so will other people
okay.
as well. But, you know, here's
okay.
the other thing. If it was in your own backyard, you know, and those properties were close together, that would probably be on the plus side as well because now you've got a little portfolio going on that you could add to and, you know. So those types of deals are those are on-the-fence deals, you know. You got to really take a look at them and decide for your purposes, does the deal make sense?
Okay. All right, cool. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Everybody should have gotten an invitation to the live broadcast we're having at 2:00 today. We're going to introduce the staff. We're going to be talking about what's the smartest thing they learned from being here. Some people have been here for 17 years, and some people have been here for a couple weeks, actually. And they'll talk about their best Christmas memories as well. So if you didn't get an invitation to that link, that should have went out to everybody. You could probably email to Jeff right now. Sorry, Jeff. You're the only one I could think of. The email address, you won't know what's going on. And then he can email you back the link so that you can – it's a live stream. We call it a live stream. So it's a live streaming event. So this call will end at 1:45, and I'm going to go over there and get ready for that 2:00 call. That being said, let's get as many calls as we can get in. So who's next?
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. It's Mark again. Sorry about that. Not sure what happened to the line, but we're back.
It was really it was weird things happening.
Back to this one building that we have. It's 48 units over several buildings, and it was bought in 2015 for just under $500,000. And today they have it on the market for around $2 million. And I asked the broker, you know, how they could account for that appreciation. And he said the roofs were replaced and some deferred maintenance was done, but it still sounded like it's like a 350% increase. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Well, it all depends on the situation. It depends on, you know, what it was like when they first get in there. And just the roofs it really all depends on cash flow. One of the things I try not to do is I try not to see how much money the guy before me is going to make, you know what I mean, what type of a deal that they got. I just want to know that I got a good, solid property that's got good bones and that the numbers work. And if that's the case and I can get a good value add out of it, then, you know, then I'm in. And I don't care if the guy before me made a couple $1 million or not.
I see. Yeah.
I would have liked to have gotten it and made that couple $1 million myself, but I certainly don't have property envy.
Okay, good advice. The next question I had, there's another building with 48 units, and they're all one-bedroom units, all about 700 square feet bedrooms.
Yep.
So what the broker's saying is that a lot of these can be turned into two bedrooms, and I'm wondering if that sounds like it's – is that labor-intensive? I mean, you'd be putting up a wall and maybe some electrical work for each unit, but you'd basically be doubling – turning all the one bedrooms into two bedrooms, or at least, you know, over time you could do it as you needed. But does that sound like it would be a lot of work?
It all depends on how it's laid out. I mean, really, when we were buying the flat top threes around East Boston and Brockton and Dorchester, the living room became the fourth bedroom a lot of times, or the third bedroom, depending, because it always went kitchen, dining room, living room. So, and there was usually pocket doors or slider doors, and those that aren't familiar with pocket doors are doors that come in and out of the wall. So you had these pocket doors, and you just basically build that wall right there where the pocket doors were, and then seal off the doors and put in a closet, and now you had another bedroom. So 700 square feet is not that big for a two-bedroom, that's for sure. But, I mean, if you're in the middle, if this is the deal, is this deal in the Boston area?
No, this is Virginia. It's right. It's the same thing, around $2 million.
So I'm not familiar with whatever market you're in, but, I mean, you got to take a look at what the competition is. You got to really take a look at you got to do a competitive market analysis and to see if you have a 700, square-foot, two-bedroom, shaped the way that you're going to have to shape yours, because if it wasn't originally planned like that, there's probably going to be kind of a weird shape to it. But shape yours and, what you can get for rent. Basically.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
and then it's the whole thing is the break-even analysis. Is the amount of money I'm putting in, is it kind of come back, twice as much in a three-year period or so?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it's probably only going to raise the rents another $100 or $150 per month, so we got to do that analysis, I guess. Yeah,
100, 150 out of 48 units.
Right.
So let me see. Let me do some quick math. So 48 times. Let's say you get up to 150. That's $7,200 per month times 12 is. $86,000, you'd actually be raising the value potentially as much as $860,000.
Wow, okay.
By doing that. So, I mean, yeah, I would take a look at those numbers and see how much it would. And now I did that. I was not conservative. I did that at 150. But
okay.
I mean, at 100, it's probably going to come in at about $500,000 to $600,000. So, it's only going to cost you $100,000 to $200,000 to do it. There you go.
Right.
You could make it into two bedrooms and then raise the rent and then flip it over. Make some good money in a short period of time if you want, or maybe just sit in some cash flow for a while.
Yeah, right. So we got to check the layout to make sure that it makes sense to do that and that it's be reasonable and do the numbers again. Okay.
Yeah, the layout, what type of permitting environment are you going into? Boston Forever was 2-3 years before you could get your permit. You want to make sure you're not in a city that's going to do that. See how fast you're probably going to get your permit and what's involved in that. And just do your due diligence on the deal. If you think it's a deal, get it on the contract, then do your full due diligence and then make a decision at the end as to whether or not you think it's
right.
What you want to do. And while you're doing it, if you have any questions, feel free to call over here. I'll be happy to look at what you have for information and try to interpret it for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Dave. Thanks.
All right.
One more question.
Yep, go ahead.
It's one more building. It's 64 units over several buildings, and the numbers work, but it's right near a massive public housing area, and there's not much parking. It's one of those properties we should run from.
It's in public housing, but what type of – are you trying to attract that type of person into this property?
No, not necessarily. It's basically on the edge of the public housing area, so, it may or may not be a problem, but I'm just wondering, due to crime rates and things like that, I mean, we still have to look at that, but the numbers work.
I would take a look at the rental history. I would take a look at the rent's right, people will live there. So I would take a look at the rental history, what it rented at, for the last couple of years, and then make sure that you do have some, you know, you do know what the rents are, you know, if they're going down at all because of the area, how much they went down, or, you know, what the property supported for rent. And then, yeah, you'd be surprised where people live. I mean, you're from Somerville, and you know Boston, and I know a lot of the major cities around the U.S. You know, there's some nice properties right across the street from very difficult properties, and that just happened to be where the property was built, and people live there. I learned this a long time ago at Northeastern in my economics class. It's all about supply and demand, and the price always moves the demand.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Dave, thank you. Appreciate all your help, and I don't want to hold things up. I know there's other people that want to talk, so thanks again, and have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Hey, come visit us. Have you been to the office, Mark?
I have. We should come down again.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah, come visit us again.
Yeah, all right.
All right.
Take care.
Take care, Mark. That goes for anybody out there. You want to come visit us in the office, I just happen to say that the market is from Somerville. Somerville is probably about 45 minutes from here with no traffic. But doesn't matter. I got somebody flying in from, I think she's from San Diego, flying in next Thursday to have lunch. So if you're in the area, feel free to come by. We're happy to give you a tour of the place and have some food together. It'll be fun. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Dan. Dan, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, this is Dan Carato. How are you doing?
Hey, Dan, what's going on?
I've got a question. I'm trying to figure out what the upfront money would be to get into a deal. So I'm thinking about let's say 50 units at $40,000 a unit, or like a $2 million deal. And I know the earnest money would be let's say 1%. And then I'm wondering about, you know, what other monies would I have to have to get me through due diligence and into the closing table when I get my money from my investors, and which ones of those could I use credit cards with, like attorney fees?
Let me see. You could. I don't know. All right. So let me go with the fees first. So first of all,
okay,
you're going to have your deposit for your. When you put your letter of intent in, that deposit is going to be 1 to 3% of the purchase price, depending on the size of the deal. The remainder of that deposit, you may put up partial or all, but the remainder will be due at the signing of the purchase and sale. So that's going to be 1 to 3% of the purchase price, but that will come back to you. You will need to have attorney's fees, and if you're new with them, they will require a retainer. And that can be, if it's the person that's going to negotiate the purchase and sale agreement and fix it, for you, usually a local attorney. They're going to require about $1,500 up front as a retainer, and the rest at closing. If an SEC attorney is going to charge you anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 to get the job done, and they're going to require probably $4,000 or $5,000 up front to get started as well. Your property inspection is going to be $50 per door, typically, so that'll be an out-of-pocket expense. Those are most of the costs that you'll see going in, other than if you travel or rent your car and all that, if you have to go to the market.
I know attorneys take credit cards. How about like property inspectors? Do they?
I'm sure some do. You'd have to call up and ask them if they actually do or not. And then you actually get cash advance from your credit card. I know you typically can't get the amount that you have available on your credit card, but you can still get some. I mean, I bought houses with credit cards when I first started because I had no money, but I had a bunch of credit cards. So I kept saying yes to all the ones that came in the mail, So I bought a two-family property for $72,000 all on cash advance credit cards.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so the earnest money, the attorney fees, which could run, about maybe $6,500 altogether for both attorneys, and then about $50 a door on the inspections.
Yep.
Okay, awesome. Okay, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Hey, good luck.
Thank you.
All right, so I was having a little deja vu because I know I just answered these questions, and I'm thinking, where did I, what is going on here? And then I just realized that on Saturday, I was in front of a group in San Antonio. There was a boot camp going on, and I was Skyped in. And these questions in this order were asked. That's very interesting. So I want to welcome the Master Shooters from San Antonio as well. Welcome aboard. So here's the thing. So you do have some homework. Your homework is that you've got to have a very Merry Christmas or a very Happy Holiday, a very Happy Hanukkah, a very Happy Kwanzaa, or whatever, whatever other happy you might have. But your homework is to be merry this time of year. Your homework is to reconnect with old family and friends that you haven't seen in a while, or maybe there's a reason you just haven't talked to each other. And you know, the best gift you can give to yourself, not to anybody else in this world, but the best gift that you can give to yourself is to forgive somebody. And that way, that person no longer rents any space in your mind. It gives you peace of mind, and you can move on. It has nothing to do with the other person. It has everything to do with you. So think about that. Think about that during this holiday weekend. Who out there can you forgive and move forward? And that's it. So Jeannie's going to be on next Tuesday with a Girl Jeannie. Set yourself up next year by planning it, at least the first quarter, and we'll talk again at the beginning of next year. All right, bye, everybody.